This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Rule number one of business and economic reporting, and of life, actually, nothing is as it seems. Exhibit A today, inflation. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Tuesday today. This one is the 13th of April. Good, as always, to have you along, everybody. We told you about this yesterday, how inflation numbers are going to be out of whack for a while because what's happening in this economy today just isn't what was happening in this economy a year ago. And sure enough, technically speaking, the good people at the Department of Labor informed us this morning that consumer prices were up 2.6% over a year ago, higher than that number's been in a very good long while. Biggest jump in almost 9 years in point of fact. But
we tend to talk about inflation on a year-over-year basis when you think about it is very backward-looking.
Sarah House is a senior economist at Wells Fargo.
In normal times when things are pretty calm, that works pretty well. But of course, this time last year was very different.
Sure was.
Think about what you were doing a year ago. So you were canceling vacations. You weren't shopping for clothes. You're getting a break on your car insurance because you weren't driving anywhere.
All of which is to say,
these dynamics, they're going to be even more pronounced come next month. So we'll be talking about this for a little bit longer.
Grain of salt is all we're saying, people. Grain of salt. Sarah House at Wells Fargo there helping us out. Stocks didn't much care about inflation today or that J&J vaccine pause. The algorithms that drive the major indices, I should say, is what didn't care. But over the course of this pandemic, millions of regular people started investing in stocks for the first time to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars going into equities. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore explains what that wave of new investors might mean for markets and for those rookie traders themselves.
John Hollywood is a motorcycle salesman in Las Vegas. He started investing in stocks for the first time in June of last year.
When my friend had come in and showed me the app he was using, I saw how easy it was to actually do, so I started trading the next day.
Hollywood is one of an estimated 10 million people who started trading stocks in 2020. It's a record. Andrew Deanna is with Charles Schwab, which recently surveyed these investors.
The average age is younger, at about 35 versus 48 for existing investors in the survey, but over a third are Gen X and above.
Charles Schwab is, by the way, a Marketplace underwriter. This explosion did not happen just because everyone was stuck at home. It started before the pandemic. In 2019, no-fee trading became the norm. It became easy to trade small pieces of high-priced stocks instead of whole shares. And then stocks plunged at the beginning of the pandemic. Eric Liu is head of research at Vanda Research.
You had one of the largest drawdowns that we'd seen in the past decade. That was a pretty juicy opportunity for a lot of these people.
According to Vanda's data, leading up to 2020, retail investors were net buying about $6 billion worth of U.S. stock a month. That is now $27 billion a month. Devin Ryan is with JMP Securities.
The baseline of trading activity is also going to be dramatically higher than we've ever seen historically.
Which means volatility, particularly among stocks of smaller companies, is going to be higher. And a lot of these new retail investors could have a better shot at growing their savings if they take a long-term approach, which so far many appear to be doing. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
Okay, from one asset class, equities, to another, real estate. Now, there are lots of reasons that home prices have been rising throughout most of the pandemic, the biggest reason of which is too many people fighting over not enough homes. I should tell you, though, I'm using the word people there loosely. A report from John Burns Real Estate Consulting figures 1 in 5 homes sold in the United States these days goes to an investor, often an institutional investor, think pension or a sovereign wealth fund, and one that's often paying cash, by the way. And that means it's getting even harder for regular people to have a shot at becoming homeowners. Marketplace's Amy Scott covers real estate for us.
Lisa Bishop is a real estate agent in Fort Walton Beach, Florida, a small city on the Gulf Coast. She says investment groups are snapping up single-family homes, either to fix up and flip or to rent out for the income. She had a recent client, a first-time buyer, who got outbid on 6 houses.
It's great for sellers, but it's very discouraging for your average buyer.
Investor sales are up 65% in Fort Walton from a year ago, according to John Burns Real Estate Consulting. They're up 54% in Flagstaff, 41% in Tulsa. The firm's Rick Palacios Jr. says investor is a big umbrella, but he says more of them are institutions like pension funds and insurance companies.
Groups that weren't investing in the U.S. housing market, namely along the lines of single-family rental, realized, oh my gosh, this is an asset class that has been doing well pre-COVID and is thriving during COVID. We should take a look.
Investors are also looking ahead. Ralph McLaughlin is chief economist at House, a real estate finance company.
I think there's some expectation that inflation is going to rise, and real estate traditionally has been a great way to hedge against inflation.
The added competition is further driving up prices for everyone, he says. Eventually, Lisa Bishop's client in Florida gave up looking and signed a lease for another year, hoping the market will calm down. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, a little bit of a mixed bag. Actually, we'll have the details when we do the numbers. Wall Street banks are going to kick off quarterly earnings season tomorrow. Spoiler alert, they made money, lots of it. But the banking system in this economy is more than just Wall Street, of course, and especially during the pandemic, community and regional banks have been the ones keeping the financial gears turning, specifically in the form of the Paycheck Protection Program, those mostly forgivable loans, 9.5 million of them so far, says the Small Business Administration. So with that in mind, we've given Lori Stewart another call. She is the president and CEO of Sound Community Bank up in Seattle, and so is responsible for some of those PPP loans. Lori, good to talk to you again.
So nice to talk to you, Kai. You know, we've been doing this for about a year now.
I know. Well, that was my first question. Maybe you peeked at my notes. Here we are a year into pandemic financial assistance, the Paycheck Protection Program. How's it been going for the companies that you have worked with in the past year?
Well, I think it's been going well. Certainly, there's a lot of economic uncertainty and strife, but we have seen great results from this, from these loans, and high levels of forgiveness.
Yeah.
It's not quite as frantic as it was the first time around, and the loan dollar amount seemed to be smaller this time, Kai.
Sound Community Bank is more than just the PPP program. How have the other parts of your business been doing this past year?
We had a fine year. We were very busy with mortgage lending, not so busy in business lending other than the PPP. So traditional business lending fell off some last year.
Which makes sense, right?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Finally starting to see that pick up a little bit more confidence, a little bit more hope. Of course, the vaccinations are making a huge difference in people's attitude.
So a couple of things, and then I'll get out of your hair. First of all, we talk a lot on this program and have been for a number of weeks now about this thing called pent-up demand, how once we all get vaccinated and once we all get, you know, back and out and can go places, there's going to be a boom. What does pent-up demand look like in the banking business?
Well, I think it'll have a different shape depending on which sector we're talking about. For our borrowers that are doing construction, single-family construction, we're already seeing some of that. We're seeing, I just talked to a borrower about 2 weeks ago that said, I'm ready to start building houses again. Mm-hmm. So that'll be one thing. Then there'll just be consumerism, right? We made more small consumer loans in the first quarter of this year than we have for ages. And these were in many cases, small used car loans. But that's a new car to the person who got it, right?
Yes, it is. So, yes, it is.
It's definitely an indication. And I was at the airport. I was lucky to spend some spring break time with my nieces and nephews. Nice. And I flew home yesterday. And, oh, my goodness, you wouldn't even know there was a pandemic except for the mask.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. All right. Last thing. And I will preface this by saying you are the past president of the American Bankers Association, not the current president.
Right.
So you speak here only for yourself. I wonder if you watched Chair Powell on 60 Minutes the other night.
I watched a piece of it. I didn't watch it all.
Chair Powell has been steadfast in saying he's not worried about inflation in this economy, that if we get some, it's going to be a bump, but it's going to settle back down. And oh, by the way, the Fed has the tools. Not to put you on the spot, you know, evaluating Jay Powell, but what do you think of what Jay Powell had to say?
Well, first of all, I need to tell you in all transparency that I sit on the Seattle branch of the Federal Reserve
Fair
Bank.
Enough.
Now I'm going to put my Lori Stewart hat on. Totally Lori Stewart, not a Fed board member, an ABA board member, or even a CEO. I'm really encouraged by the chairman and his comments. And of all the things I worry about at night, inflation is not one of them. Housing prices, jobs, you know, a whole bunch of things. But I am not staying up at night worrying about inflation.
Fair enough. Lori Stewart, she's the president, the CEO of Sound Community Bank up in Seattle, and an occasional guest on this program the past year or so. Lori, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Uber said this week that March was its best month ever. Yes, mostly thanks to food delivery, but ride sharing is coming back too, y'all. More people took Ubers and Lyfts last month than at any time since the pandemic started. And as we reported last week, both companies now say they are looking at a shortage of drivers in the face of all that growing demand. Marketplace's Samantha Fields has the update.
Stephen Sharifi went more than a year without getting in an Uber or a Lyft, but he just got his second dose of vaccine.
And that's where I started feeling comfortable riding again.
Sharifi is 27 and lives in Austin. And when he did get back into an Uber a couple of weeks ago,
at first it was a familiar yet unfamiliar feeling where I was like, oh, this still feels a little bit weird, but I've done a few more. It's now I'm kind of feeling more comfortable doing it.
So are a lot of people.
We're seeing ride demand track closely with vaccination rates.
John Zimmer is co-founder and president of Lyft. He says this last year has been tough. But now?
There's just an incredible amount of demand. We're seeing longer rides than normal. We're seeing people go out to restaurants, seeing sports and things like that.
That is definitely the case in Dallas, where Edmund Vero drives for Uber a couple of days a week. He's been taking people to all of those places, restaurants, bars, Texas Rangers games.
Also a lot of business, starting to pick up business people again from the airport.
Vero has been driving throughout the pandemic and before, and he says business has really picked up in the last couple of months.
It's not uncommon for certain times of the day on certain days to have back-to-back-to-back rides.
Which was not the case for much of 2020. And with so many more people requesting rides again and all the promotions Uber's running now to try to lure drivers back, Vero says he made $41 an hour in March compared to $23 an hour last November. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
You need business and economic news early of a morning? David Brancaccio and the gang at the Marketplace Morning Report have you covered. Coming up.
Sanitation is actually a fantastic investment.
I am totally with you right there. Totally. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials gave up 68 today, 0.2%, 33,677. The NASDAQ up 146. That's points. The percent is more than one. Ended at 13,996. The S&P 500 added 13 points, about a 3%. 41.41. Shares of Johnson & Johnson, since it's been in the news, fell 1.3% today. Yesterday was a sad day for film here in Los Angeles, not the making of them, but for the watching of them. The owner of two of the region's movie theater chains announced it's going to permanently close all locations of its Pacific Theaters and ArcLight Cinemas. That's hundreds of screens throughout Southern California. AMC Entertainment, speaking of films and movies, picked up 2.5%. Cinemark Holdings gave up 1.8% today. You're listening to Marketplace.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. One of the changes the pandemic has wrought on this economy is that some people are leaving some big cities in search of the rural life, whence they can work remotely while enjoying the outdoors and bigger, presumably cheaper houses. Zoom towns, those places they go, are apparently called. Do not look at me. I did not make it up. But anyway, case in point, Truckee, California, population about 16,000, up in the Sierra Nevada mountains, about 20 minutes from Lake Tahoe. Beautiful hiking and great skiing and all the outdoorsiness a renegade San Franciscan could want. Problem is, a lot of the locals are none too pleased with all the newcomers, or the traffic, or the slower internet, or the packed grocery stores. Marketplace's Matt Levin has the story.
Kaya Brown is a true Truckee local. She spent most of her life here. She knows every inch of this trail we're on, loves the Truckee River just as much as the snow, greets passersby with a warm, easygoing welcome. Like other longtime residents, she also has an independent streak, which lately has been a problem. Kaya is a 14-year-old dog, a border collie mix. She was on the receiving end of those angry barks from what looked like a very tightly wound boxer on a very tightly wound leash.
Okay, good dogs. Yeah, you can have another treat.
That's Carla Brown, Kaya's owner, and a frustrated professional dog trainer at the moment. Kaya was just chilling off leash, which is kind of what Truckee dogs do. On trails, in town, crossing intersections. Or they did, until an influx of Bay Area dogs tethered to their Bay Area owner showed up.
Just creates this thing where you've got a dog on a leash that's freaking out, and a person who's freaking out, and other dogs who are like, we didn't do anything. What did we do?
Then their owners go on next door and ask the locals to leash their dogs, and you can guess what happens next. Things were simpler when Brown moved here in the 1990s.
It was a sleepy little town. There was one grocery store. There was the hardware store, which is kind of the center of everyone's existence.
Truckee has grown a lot since then. Now there's brew pubs and boutiques that sell $90 sweatpants. But the town hasn't seen anything like last year. Early estimates show the population could be up 1,500 people, a 10% increase. Mark Burley is a carpenter who has lived in the Lake Tahoe area for 20 years. He says the change goes beyond the sheer numbers.
If you've lived in the Bay, you've never once had somebody from Tahoe come up to you in the Bay and tell you how to do things in the Bay. That has never, ever happened to you. Whereas that happens to us constantly.
In the before times, Truckee in the Bay had more of an understanding. The richer second homeowners and tourists would vacation here in winter and summer and feed the local economy. And the rest of the time, the river and mountains and snow were reserved for the locals. Now many of those locals can't afford to live here. Truckee already had a housing shortage. Then the Zoomtowners came and drove up prices 20%. David Polavy was Truckee's mayor last year.
We're losing our middle class. We're losing our workforce, and we can't have a community that's just built for people who are more affluent.
But at the same time, business is booming. Sasha Severance is the assistant manager at Alibi Ale Works, a local brewery. It's pretty packed for a Thursday afternoon. She has mixed feelings about the new arrivals.
For our businesses that were shut down during what's usually our busiest season of Christmas and New Year's, we feel really grateful that we have this business and this influx.
Patty Padilla is part of that influx. She moved here in August from San Francisco.
I came for a month and I just haven't left yet.
Padilla is an event planner for big nonprofits. With her job going fully remote, she's seriously thinking of just staying forever. She says she gets along with the locals just fine.
You know, as long as you're being like really kind, thoughtful, you're not making a mess, and you're helping to contribute to the community in some way, I think everyone's like welcoming us with open arms. I mean, they came from somewhere at some point too, right?
Right. A lot of the people who consider themselves locals moved here in the 90s or 2000s, and plenty were from the Bay. But Severance, the brewery's assistant manager, was born and raised here, and she doesn't think she'll stay.
You know how there's the slogan, Truckee love? Someone's come up with Truckee was because it used to be a certain way.
A few months back, Severance's family got a notice from the county sheriff. A new neighbor was upset their dog was off leash. In Truckee, I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
President Biden met with a bipartisan group of lawmakers in the Oval Office yesterday, trying to make the case for his $2 trillion infrastructure plan. Part of the administration's pitch for this thing is that taking one problem, climate change, for instance, can help solve others. Getting better jobs, improving infrastructure, that is the logic. That is also the idea at the core of a new book by science journalist Chelsea Wald. It's called Pipe Dreams, The Urgent Global Quest to Transform the Toilet. Chelsea, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Why did you want to write this book? What was the moment when you said, you know what, I need to write a book about toilets?
Well, I'm a science and environmental journalist. And in 2013, I got assigned two stories that on first glance seemed unrelated. So one was about new technologies for these contexts where people might have poor toilets or no toilets at all. And the other was about our cities and where we might find heat in our cities that was untapped. And one of those places was the sewer. And I realized that there was a whole group of innovators and scientists coming up with ways that we could really ask more of our toilets.
A very brief historical note here. Basically, the commode has been the same for 100 years, plus or minus, right?
Yeah, really plus. The systems that are considered the sort of gold standard of sanitation systems, so that's the flush toilet attached to the sewer, is more than 100 years old in its concept. And in fact, some of the infrastructure itself is 100 years old.
I'm sure in New York City and older cities in this country and in the world, there are pipes down there that are way more than 100 years old. but let's get to solutions then, right? Because you lay out in this book, I mean, it's totally fascinating, historical and technological thing, but there is a place you have in your mind's eye that is a place where toilets do a whole bunch of different things. What does that place look like? If we can ever get there.
You're talking about Lutopia?
I am indeed talking about Lutopia, yes.
Well, Lutopia is a place where we can ask more of our toilets than we do today, and a place where everybody has access to safe toilets. Our toilets have been wonderful at separating us from our collective excrement, but there are more radical transformations of the toilet that people are imagining. For example, our pee and poop are actually raw materials, and we can make energy out of them. We can get the nutrients out of them and make fertilizers. We can collect used toilet paper. There's a project that collects used toilet paper out of sewers and can recycle that into cellulose, which is a component of asphalt.
Really?
Yeah, in the Netherlands, they're working on this, and they've paved a bike lane out of this recycled toilet paper. There's hardly anything more Dutch than you can think of than that combination of water infrastructure and cycling.
We should say here you are based in the Netherlands, so you know whereof you speak. But all of that gets to the last couple of points I want to raise. The first is this is a ginormous infrastructure project, right? When you think of all the infrastructure that needs to get fixed and, you know, facilities and homes and all of this stuff, it's not a cheap proposition. And I wonder how you make the case to the people who decide how we spend our money, why this is deserving of their attention.
Well, sanitation is actually a fantastic investment. One estimate is that globally, for every dollar spent on universal sanitation, investors could get a return of at least $5.50. And likewise, a failure to invest in maintaining infrastructure here in the United States costs the economy in healthcare and service disruptions to businesses. So if you want to talk about the business proposition, it is a very good one. But toilets are really about more than just that. They're about human health and human dignity. For those of us who have good working toilets, it's hard to imagine life without it. But it is something that I think every human being deserves to have.
Chelsea Wald, her most recent book is called Pipe Dreams, The Urgent Global Quest to Transform the Toilet. Chelsea, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for having me on, Kai.
This final note on the way out today, in which I am just going to call it right here, right now, pandemic is over. Saw this in the Wall Street Journal this morning. Our great national toilet paper hoarding nightmare has come to a merciful end. The journal spotted some data from Nielsen IQ. That's the data arm of the ratings company. Nielsen says what it calls bath tissue sales in January were down 4% from January a year ago, right before we all started stocking up. So either we are drawing down the inventories we've got stashed in our garages, or, you know, we've come to our senses. All right, we got to go, but super quick moment of economic context here, courtesy of the Commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service in a Senate hearing today. He figures, the guy in charge of taxes, he figures the tax gap in this economy, the difference between what's owed and what's paid, could top $1 trillion a year. How about that? Our digital and on-demand team is Carrie Barber, Janet Wynn, and Catherine Wiles. Sitar Nieves is our Executive Director of On Demand. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.